Welcome back. It's a Wednesday, hump day, the 12th day of July, 2023. I'm your host, Mark Hall. And you know what, folks? I got to admit right up front, some days this is a really tough show to put together. I know and I appreciate the fact that it can also be a very difficult show to listen to. But remember, we're told by the Mashiach that we're supposed to know the times and the seasons through multiple different parables in multiple different ways. The bottom line is, don't be caught as by a thief in the night. And that means it is important to know what's going on, even if we recognize, yeah, we've heard it before, it's simply getting worse, and it's increasingly disgusting. Case in point, let's start with a piece from KCRA.com on the left coast out of Sacramento, where California lawmakers and the so-called Assembly Public Safety Committee, how's that for a disgusting misnomer, on Tuesday blocked a measure. Now listen to this, blocked a measure that would have classified human trafficking of a minor as a serious felony. Gee, do you think? Under state law. Now this is the People's Republic of California, remember, where real felonies are treated as, ha-ha, isn't that cute, and stuff that once would have been called civic responsibility is what will now put you in the California gulag. This, though, was a measure that attempted to keep repeat offenders for child sex trafficking behind bars and make them ineligible for early prison release. The measure was halfway through the state's legislative process. It had already cleared the state Senate unanimously with broad bipartisan support, but none of these six Democrats on the so-called Assembly Public Safety Committee were even willing to cast a vote on the measure Tuesday, while two Republicans, Assemblyman Juan Alanis and Tom Lackey, were the only lawmakers with the integrity to vote yes. Following the vote, those in the audience could be heard yelling, "You're horrible, and you should be ashamed of themselves." And arguably, folks, they were pulling their punches to the scumbags on the committee, while human trafficking victims in the audience embraced one another and sobbed right there in front of the dais. Said the bill's author, State Senator Shannon Grove of Bakersfield, "I'm profoundly disappointed that committee Democrats couldn't bring themselves to support this bill with their stubborn and misguided objection to any increase in penalties, regardless of how heinous the crime," said Grove. "You can pass a note to a bank and rob a bank. You can commit arson. That's considered a serious felony. But trafficking a minor child in the state of California is not." Oh, yeah, folks, and don't even think about trying to buy a gun in the People's Republic. Let me put it this way as your host. You can sell a kid into sex slavery in California, but don't you dare try to buy a gun to protect a kid from exactly that kind of demonism. Is there some Soviet-style posturing and politics going on here? Oh, yeah, you betcha. Is it criminal? Not anymore, obviously. Not in America with a K. Is it worse than criminal? Well, no, folks. That doesn't even begin to tell you what's really happening. It's downright satanic. By the way, the story goes on to note that the same asinine Assembly Public Safety Committee and its leader, Reggie Jones Sawyer, had already received criticism this year for refusing to hear fentanyl-related public safety bills, and they've also rejected other measures, increasing penalties for other party favorites, including other violent sex offenses. What else is new? Here's another story, similar concept, different aspect of the problem, and yeah, we've heard this one before too. It's just that more and more information keeps coming out saying it's even worse than has already been admitted, but you knew that. From Mike LaChance via the Gateway Pundit, new to release documents now confirm what millions of Americans have believed for quite some time now, that members of the Obama regime, that would be Obama I, prior to the latest senile imposter, actively did whatever they could to sabotage the incoming Trump administration that wasn't supposed to win. And if you recall, back in 2016, because they hadn't rigged it quite as effectively as they later managed to accomplish. People like General Flynn were targeted through the process of unmasking and more. And all of the heavily redacted documents now in circulation were obtained through a FOIA, or Freedom of Information Act, request. They come from the National Security SIC agency, and they tell at least part of the story of a final month rush by the outgoing regime to torpedo the incoming elected presidency of Donald Trump. The Daily Signal this time obtained 217 pages of documents from the NSA through a FOIA request, which revealed that Obama administration officials, including the Vice President, Joseph Robinette Biden, back before he got completely senile, down to several ambassadors and a number of officials in the Treasury and Energy Department, gained access to secret information about then-Lieutenant General Michael Flynn, President-elect Trump's choice for national security advisor, and they wanted to make blankety-blanking sure that wasn't going to happen. And I can recall, folks, even on day one, how the press was anxious to make it clear that Obama made that clear to the incoming president. And guess what? Three of those officials who participated in that act of treason are now high-ranking officials in the illegitimate O'Biden regime, a.k.a. Obama's third term. Dennis McDonough, Obama's chief of staff for his entire second term, is now Secretary of Veterans Affairs for the Biden-Fuhrer. Samantha Power, Obama's ambassador to the UN, who made a number of requests for information on Flynn, is now administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID. And Elizabeth Sherwood Randall, deputy secretary for Obama and the Energy Department, is now Biden's Octung Homeland Security Advisor. Here's a story that's been getting a lot of coverage in the alternative media. It should, but it shouldn't surprise us either. Major Biden crime family whistleblower, Dr. Gal Luft, has been seized by the Biden crime family Gestapo, a.k.a. the DOJ, which previously indicted the whistleblower just 1 week after he released a video detailing various criminal allegations against the bribe-taking, treasonous Biden crime family. The dual U.S.-Israeli citizen was hit with an 8-count indictment and charged with a number of offenses, most of which have already passed the statute of limitations. But hey, if you're blowing the whistle against the regime, that doesn't matter. And ironically, most of the crimes are actually things that the Biden family has been getting away with, and that shouldn't surprise anybody either. Things having to do with FARA and foreign agent registration, which again, if you're taking bribes, even from the same foreign entities, obviously you don't want to do with the State Department. That's evidently what kickbacks after rigging the election are all about. But on the other hand, you peons had better watch out. Dr. Gal Luft released a 14-minute video to the New York Post on Thursday last week detailing damning allegations against the Biden-Fuhrer and his family in a massive international bribery scheme that, they kept under wraps until well after the rigged election. He made the fatal mistake of thinking that if he came forward and provided information about the real criminals, they would be the ones to get arrested. It was filmed in an undisclosed location, but somehow the Justice Department found out about it and nailed him. And it has to do with the fact that Luft was an advisor to CEFC, a communist Chinese so-called energy foundation and business conglomerate with extremely close ties both to the Communist Chinese Party and Hunter Biden et al. Gal Luft said he was arrested in Cyprus in order to stop him from testifying before the House Oversight Committee. At one point, he was justifiably afraid he might be a fugitive for the rest of his life. Now I guess he's got other things to worry about. And the real question, folks, is whether he'll survive what they've got planned for him next. From the World War III front, which might be just in time to prevent more such information from coming out, Dmitry Medvedev, the deputy chairman of the Russian Security Council and former president, has warned that, quote, the Third World War is approaching, unquote. And by that, he probably means the nuclear variant thereof. He stressed that Russia will respond to a recent bombing carried out by Ukraine using the new Biden-Fuhrer-approved cluster munitions. More on that in a minute. But you no doubt already understand the incredible hypocrisy of the unelected deep state regime. Medvedev wrote via telegram that the preliminary results of today's NATO summit were identical to Russia's prior expectations, pointing out that the special military op will continue with the same goals, the most important of which is to prevent Kyiv's efforts to join NATO and escalate the nuclear confrontation. Medvedev also said that all Western aid to the Kyiv regime with various weapons, the latest of which is the cluster munitions, is doomed to a dead end, and yep, nuclear war, a.k.a. the Third World War, is approaching. And what does all this mean for us, he added. Well, everything is clear. The special military operation will continue with the same goals. One of those is the refusal of the Kyiv Nazis group to join NATO, which we insisted on from the beginning and is considered impossible for us. And listen to this, folks. He indicated that this goal means, quote, Russia will have to get rid of this group, unquote, stressing the need to complete this plan to end the conflict and bring peace to Ukraine. And he said, almost as an afterthought, it was reported that the city of Tukmak was bombed with cluster munitions. This means, he said, that it is time to reveal our arsenals of this inhumane weapon, unquote. And obviously, the escalations continue. And both wings of the warbird are flapping with joy. What do you bet Lindsey Graham practically wet his pants? And you already know what the Biden-Fuhrer did. Which basically takes us to more antics of the senile imposter. And while we may have heard all this before, folks, stick with me. It is important at this point. Ask why the United States needs to send these civilian and child-killing weapons to Ukraine that other countries have banned by treaty. The Biden-Fuhrer literally stuck his dirty diaper in his mouth and did things that, military people are saying he should not have done. Here's what looks like the Biden-Fuhrer body double, because the lobes just don't seem right, appearing on CNN, where he was asked this question.
What made you change your mind and decide to give them these weapons?
Two things, Fareed, and it was a very difficult decision on my part.
But hey, you know, folks, somebody shoved a piece of paper in front of him, told him to sign it, and he didn't know what he was looking at anyway, so sure, what's the problem? But here's the important part of the senile rambling answer.
The Ukrainians are running out of ammunition. The ammunition, they call them 155 millimeter weapons. This is a war relating to munitions and the running out of that ammunition, and we're low on it.
So let me see here. Did we hear that right? The erstwhile so-called commander-in-chief tells the so-called enemy that we're running out of ammunition. Does that sound wise to you? Even though most of us have realized for quite some time that's been precisely his intent. Okay, well, of the puppeteers anyway. Make sure that when the United States really needs these things, we don't have any more of them anyway and can't make them. One more time, let's just make sure we heard it right.
This is a war relating to munitions and the running out of that ammunition, and we're low on it.
Well, as you might expect, a lot of military folks have condemned the idiot for such a gaffe. Army veteran and former U.S. Senate candidate Jake Bickett on Fox and Friends called the latest Biden gaffe, quote, embarrassing and humiliating. He drew attention to the severe consequences that such an indiscretion would have had for ordinary soldiers, just kind of like the same crimes that he commits routinely would have had for ordinary people, and said, I have to laugh, because as an Army officer, former Army officer myself, if me or one of my soldiers were to tweet or give some kind of a media interview where we revealed such crucial information to the public, we would be censured, maybe even imprisoned, unquote. I can't help but think about it this way, folks. Since especially this does look like the wrong kind of earlobes, thus the body double, maybe they've had enough of the Biden-Fuhrer, and they're finally deciding to put the torpedoes into the bow. And with that in mind, these next stories are particularly interesting. First, the setup piece, courtesy of Dr. Ron Paul, M.D., about the most recent and most important First Amendment case, courtesy of federal judge Terry A. Doughty, who, as Dr. Paul put it, commemorated Independence Day by striking a blow against the fascist regime and the separation of big tech and state. Specifically, said America's elder statesman, he issued a preliminary injunction prohibiting a number of government officials and agencies from communicating with socialist media companies to request that they continue to censor certain posts. And as you may recall, we talked about it here, he said in issuing that preliminary injunction that, quote, if the allegations made by plaintiffs are true, and he indicated it looked like they would be proven in court, the present case arguably involves the most massive attack against free speech in United States history. Which is why Big Brother, it would seem, isn't about to let a mere court or the Constitution stop them from doing what must be done.
You cursed rat! Look what you've done! I'm melting! Oh, what a world, what a world! Who would have thought a good little girl like you could destroy my beautiful wickedness? Ah, the bow! The bow! I'm going!
So what would you expect the regime to do? Yep. As expected, says TGP, the Biden regime filed an emergency stay with the Fifth Circuit Court, demanding the right to continue their censorship and to silence and manipulate the American public. And if you look at the rest of the news, it's continuing to be obvious why it is such an emergency that they keep doing what they've been able to get away with up until now. Case in point, we'll start with the benign, or at least the relatively benign, onto the downright satanic. The Biden-Fuhrer is on his Bidenomics tour, trumpeting, says Zero Hedge, what he claims are his regime's economic gains. And what they've done, in other words, is destroy what's left of the American economy and send more and more Americans right down the old cesspool to economic ruin and the coming hyperinflation. This effort comes as no surprise, says the piece, because as Andy Puzder notes for National Review and Real Clear Politics has pointed out in their polls, only about 38% of Americans approve of the Biden-Fuhrer's ability to torpedo the economy. And to date, his regime's efforts to convince Americans of the obvious to the contrary have fallen way short of the mark. Case in point, in an effort to avoid responsibility for a still surging inflation rate while claiming credit for reducing it, the Biden Fuhrer economic team recently posted a video boldly stating, "Here are the facts." And guess what, folks? Inflation has fallen. That is, if you don't actually measure it with anything approaching real numbers. But aren't we used to that? Hey, follow the science, follow the BS. You know, don't you, that actually looking at data is white supremacism. And if a can of dog food now costs you more than a good steak used to, well, you're probably a domestic violent extremist. Shut up and eat your mealworms and be thankful to the almighty state we let you have that. Here's another example of why Big Brother needs that injunction, and we need it today. The Secret Service on Monday told reporters there's still, hey, say it with me, folks, no suspect in the latest Biden-Fuhrer White House cocaine scandal, and they are completely baffled. But gosh darn it, says Jim Hoff for TGP, they'll keep on looking for that culprit who left a bag of cocaine in the library, traffic hallway, no, near Kamala Harris's parking spot. Now, well, they keep changing their story, he notes, which really isn't suspicious at all, unless you're a domestic violent extremist and probably deserve to end up in a California gulag. The Secret Service originally said the coke was found in the library, Mr. Green Jeans with a candlestick, don't you know? And then the story started changing, and now the story is basically disappearing completely from the news. So pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. Here's another one they really don't want you to hear about, but remember, folks, ridicule is the best weapon. This time it's TGP's Colin Linebarger, who notes that the Biden-Fuhrer has been given many fitting nicknames over the course of his disgusting and evil political career, including Sleepy Joe, Creepy Joe, Dementia Joe, Corrupt Joe Biden, and, of course, the Biden-Fuhrer himself. But thanks to yesterday's explosive revelation that Biden demeans his staff verbally, vocally, and loudly in various ways, including screaming uncontrollably at them, now we have perhaps the most fitting and brutal nickname yet for the fake president. Yesterday's cover of the New York Post unveiled the nickname in that dramatic fashion. And remember this one, folks, Old Yeller. From the 1957 movie about a loving dog who has to be put down after he contracts rabies. Not only does it remind Americans of the ancient age of the senile imposter, but it blows up any remaining veneer of the Biden-Fuhrer as a kindly old grandpa who eats his ice cream. Instead, it perfectly encapsulates the true character of a mean old hair-sniffing pervert of a man with a violent temper to boot. So, yeah, quick, it's an emergency. Get that injunction reversed. We've got a lot of truth to silence, and we need to do it now. At least one more example of what we're talking about. Dr. Peter McCullough, not only America's leading cardiologist, but one of the foremost COVID-19 experts in the nation, is exposing the truths about the plandemic and the bioweapon and the experimental vaccines that were forced on so many gullible Americans. He reviewed recent studies of the prevalence of serious heart-related issues after taking the poison poke and wrote, quote, "The COVID-19 vaccine campaign has generated a tidal wave of new patients with a variety of problems. Fortunately, many issues were able to handle in the office. Adverse events warranting hospitalization, including heart attacks, though, is another matter." And he makes it clear that the mountains of scientific evidence, you know, the kind of thing that the Fauci, Fuhrer, and others have ignored and tried to silence, including a review of over 100 studies, shows the dangers of the vaccine. And he said, one can see from this analysis that cardiovascular complications, including various forms of heart attacks, do indeed occur after COVID-19 vaccination, and the medical academic community and the WHO is widely recognizing the association, even though they don't want you to hear about it. So the next time, he says, a doctor tries to gaslight you or your loved one concerning a heart attack after the vaccine, please share this. Noting that it's not just the vaccinated, those who were gullible enough to take the poison poke, who need to be concerned, also people who are around them. Because, quote, "In the most comprehensive paper on shedding thus far, former INSERM researcher Dr. Helene Benown has published the basis for which there is great likelihood that mRNA, either on liquid nanoparticles or within exosomes, is circulatory in blood and is secreted, listen to this, folks, in every body secretion that would naturally expect to contain particles of this size." Yeah, folks, the truth continues to come out, which is why Big Brother continues to fight tooth and nail and to the death against it. One more related example from the World Health Organization. What a disgusting misnomer. This one comes courtesy of the Epoch Times and Joshua Phillip. They are negotiating a new plandemic treaty that would also give WHO and the UN powers to manage policies on, no, not just things associated with killing you via injections or other bioweapons, but climate change too, which would give the WHO and Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, in particular, the unilateral power, Akhtung, to declare global pandemics and craft the totalitarian response. It has backing from the United States, what else, and the European Union, and according to the fellow travelers at the World Economic Forum, who? No, WTF. Under the accord, member states have agreed that it should be legally binding for those who sign up, overcoming early reservations, you know, back when we had an elected president, from the United States. It also includes an abomination known as One Health. And as the Epoch Times has reported, One Health is a, quote, broadening of pandemic response, they spelled it wrong, to potentially include things like farming, poverty, and climate change, which could either cause or exacerbate outbreaks or impair people's health in other ways, meaning that anything that affects the alleged well-being of humans and everything under that umbrella will be within the powers of the WHO, the globalist member states, and its so-called stakeholders, and of course, the satanic New World Order that's pushing all of this. Here next, the story your host has been thinking about one way or another now for quite a while, but Front Page Mag came right out and said it. Automakers are making electric cars, but no one wants them, so no one's buying them. The media, though, is preparing to blame car dealers, and of course, those who know better don't want to buy this crap. Pardon my bluntness, folks, but that's what's necessary at this point. Get woke, go broke is the old saying, or at least the relatively old saying. Much like soy meat substitutes were supposed to be the huge new thing until it turned out most people were perfectly happy eating real meat and then realized, ooh, it's worse for you than we thought. A combination of government bribes and coercion, a.k.a. pressure, ESG, and elite echo chambers, has led a lot of automakers to start making electric cars that people just couldn't afford and have now realized they didn't want anyway. The nationwide supply of these soon-to-be white elephants has swelled nearly 350% this year to more than 92,000 units, which turns out to be a 92-day supply, roughly 3 months' worth of EV sales, and nearly twice the industry average. And for comparisons, dealers have a relatively low 54 days' worth of actual gasoline-powered vehicles in inventory as they rebound from pandemic-related supply chain interruptions. And in normal times, there's usually a roughly 70-day supply, which is a bit of a problem. Remember, the official 5-year plan, and if that sounds a lot like communist China, it should, is to begin wiping out real internal combustion engine cars by 2030. They've already pretty well killed Volkswagen and fuel-efficient diesel-powered cars. They're working on trucks now. And let's be clear here, the goal is to force you into these things because there won't be any alternative. But ironically, pretty soon you'll realize there won't be enough power grid to charge the things they've already sold anyway, but nah, doesn't matter, you'll never be able to put replacement batteries in them either. So the real goal is you won't have a car at all. But who knows, by that time you may not care because you won't have food either. Continues Daniel Greenfield for Front Page Mag. Ford expects to sell 2 million EVs in 2025, up from 61,000 and a half last year. How do you go from selling tens of thousands to millions? The carmaker didn't even sell 2 million cars in 2023. How do they expect to sell 2 million of some kind of vehicle that nobody wants? The Ford investment in Rivian fared poorly, with the trendy electric pickup truck manufacturer spending $220,000 to make vehicles that they sold at a loss for just $81,000. Ford's going to lose a whole lot of money, something like $3 billion in electric cars in 2023. Does that sound a lot like Anheuser-Busch or Target? Maybe there's a common denominator here. We don't make or sell things people want. We have an agenda to cram down their throats. Likewise, GM, which sold less than 40,000 of these things in 2022, claims they plan to sell 1 million EVs by 2025. And yep, says Daniel Greenfield, we're already getting a preview of the party's messaging, which will blame car dealers for failing to sell consumers cars they don't want at prices they can't afford with money they don't have, while refusing to sell them cars that they do want. Even so, notes Greenfield, and ironically, while over half of consumers feel EVs are the future, whether they like it or not, only 31% of dealers do, because half of them still feel like EVs need to prove themselves in the marketplace. Meanwhile, the expensive white elephants continue to pile up in dealer inventory. And I guess in a way, folks, that's good news. At least if you don't let it into your garage, it may not catch fire and take your house with it, and there won't be enough power in the grid to charge the things wherever they sit. So if there's any good news today, folks, it's that the lie, the big, whopping, stinking lie, is getting really, really thin. And may Yahuwah bless you and yours.